You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
We'll just start this ad hoc. No script.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds great. Love it.
So I'm Justin, I mean, founder, CEO, president, head chef, and chief bottle washer of RevoFi.
Yeah. Now, pretty much.
Now, it's a very interesting, complex, blockchain-based solution that you've created. I'm not going to read anything because it's a website, which is RevoFi.com, is just very interesting is a word that doesn't really do it. But explain what you've created. Let's start there because you're going to do a much better job than I am.
Okay. Yeah, fair. Yeah, I mean, I think the easiest way to really explain it, right, very simply, is it's just like any other Wi-Fi router that you would get normally and connect to the internet. The difference is that we're actually taking a piece of the cloud that normally exists in data centers, and we're taking all of those resources that normally exist in a data center and we're moving them all the way out into that device. So normally something that would see in, say, like an Amazon Web Services data center or a Google Cloud data center or a Microsoft Azure data center, we're taking small pieces of those resources and putting them into the Wi-Fi device itself. And then we're really boosting the Wi-Fi by providing the latest kind of standard, if you will, global standard in Wi-Fi, which is Wi-Fi 6 mesh. So you get, major broadband throughput and capabilities for an upgraded device for Wi-Fi. But now you have like some very interesting capabilities with this device because you have storage and compute on there that would normally sit in a data center. So those things combined with the fact that, we're using NVIDIA-based hardware and GPUs, that really opens up, just a wide array and aperture of use cases because there's, millions of NVIDIA developers out there right now, that leverage the CUDA platform for AI development. This is from healthcare to smart cities to, to cybersecurity methodologies and use cases. So all of those things become very possible within a singular device. Whereas, normally if you go down to your local electronics store, and you buy a Wi-Fi, hotspot, it's going to cost you, around the same cash, right? Same dollar value as it would for one of our devices. You'll get Wi-Fi 6 out of it, but it'll never make you money. And you don't really get to do any other kind of like interesting things with it other than just, provides connectivity for you. Whereas with ours, you get to do all these interesting things. It will actually improve. The device will actually get better over time. So rather than buying a hotspot device that's then outdated, you can buy one of ours and it will actually be upgradable and get better over time during the ownership. Plus, it makes you money.
So there's lots and lots of moving parts there. And I suspect yes. that you started out with a fairly sort of interesting basic concept. But then the more you looked at it, the more the potential applications grew. So if we break it down and say you've got a hardware device that enables us, the home user to do what they do at the moment, which is access the internet through a Wi-Fi hotspot. But that device that you have also has additional capability. And I think one of the key things that you talked about really was not just the fact that it can do more, but that there's a potential earning stream. And this is where your Revo token comes in. But I'm interested to understand more about how the storage and how the people can mine and make money, because there's only so much you can do with one hotspot. And is it your objective really to create a very large network of these hotspots so that that can almost create like local area networks in towns and cities where, the hotspots are powerful enough that, people can use those instead of using their sort of T-Mobile connection. So break it down. So what are the compelling things for the user? I suspect it's the potential revenue stream.
Yeah, absolutely. All really good, interesting points. We can kind of, you know, pick one or break them apart there. But, you know, I think that whenever we talk to people, it's definitely, you know, the engaging part is whenever you say, oh, and you can make money with this, right? Like, you know, I think that's probably the most interesting part. And it's not just the fact that you can make, you know, money with it in one way, right? Like most devices, like, you know, you buy a device, and it's like, you can only make money with that device in one form or fashion, right? It's like a, you know, it's like a temperature sensor, right? It's only going to do one thing. Whereas with our device, you know, you're really able to do a lot of different things with it. And so not only does it actually validate, you know, the RevoFi network. So by validate, I mean, it, you know, whenever you put a hotspot out there, we have to somehow in a decentralized world, we have to say, okay, if you have that device, is it really the device that you say it is? And are you really providing the resources that you say you are?
Yes.
So we have to validate that with using blockchain technology, right?
Yeah.
And that's how we really provide some of the earning potential there for device owners, right? And we say, okay, in addition to that, you've got not just the Wi-Fi part, but you've got the storage and the compute capabilities as well. Now that on the back end, we have a cloud microservices platform that will allow companies, application developers, anybody that really uses cloud in general to launch their applications onto that device. This is really attractive for app developers and companies because now you can move those workloads that normally, you know, sit in Amazon web services or a very expensive data center, you know, that they're paying premium prices on. Now you can move this out, you know, into this local area network. You can target smaller devices. You get better reactivity. The earnings there for the customer or the device owner is now, you know, largely impacted because now you've got a lot more earning potential there by providing those different services.
And how do you, so in terms of the hardware itself, what is the capability of the Wi-Fi device? Does it have sort of local storage or is everything that you do stored in the cloud?
Yeah, no. So it's all local to the device. And the great part about it too, right, is that if I own the device, I can actually determine you know, how much of those resources I want to put back onto the network for everybody to use, right? So if I don't want to use any of the resources and just give it all back to the network, I can do that. Now, obviously, that's more earning potential, right? So the onboard storage that comes with the device that, you know, that people can choose whenever they purchase it, that amount of storage that's available there, you can decide how much to put back out to the network. The bandwidth usage itself of the Wi-Fi 6 mesh, you can set that. As well as your, now we're not an ISP, right? But we are working on modem functionality and we're working with them, you know, ISPs to do that. And, but, you know, as it sits right now, you will be able to limit how much bandwidth usage, you know, is going back onto the network as well.
Yeah. And how do you, I think, because there have been a number of distributed storage plays.
Sure.
I think, you know, how do you deal with issues such as, you know, local issues to do with storage? So, you know, is your storage replicated and layered so that if something happens to one device, it's not mission critical for, you know, a particular application?
Yeah, that's a great question. So storage is handled in a few different ways, right? But you can think of it as no different than a virtual machine or a containerized system that exists in the cloud today for applications. So because we're running what's called Kubernetes technology under the hood, just containerized like Docker as well. So those workloads, if you will, those applications and the data that goes with them can really be moved around and stored and replicated and have resiliency and redundancy throughout the entire network. The other interesting thing that we're going to be offering with our network is the ability to actually pull resources together. So as an example, if there was, say, you know, 100 devices on the network and they all had various resources available that could be used, let's say I had a very powerful AI application that I wanted to run some type of inference program, right? Very heavy compute, very heavy for data. What I could actually do is pull all of those resources, all those devices together to now run as kind of like a singular platform for compute and storage. So there's some very interesting things you can do there on the back end.
And do you have a certain scale that you need to reach to be able to offer this out in a way that's resilient? Because again, I'm just thinking about potential for you know, issues. So until you've got a particular size, do you get the resilience after a certain size, after a certain number of nodes are on the network? And up until that point, do you have, you know, potential issues with reliability?
Yeah, I think, you know, whenever we look at the numbers, that node count for what we're talking about specifically for cloud services, it hits around the, you know, 1,000 units or 1,000 nodes. So around that number, there will be enough resiliency. And I think, and redundancy at that point for everything that we're running on the network, because we're starting off with fairly small devices, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's the typical storage size of one of the routers that you have?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Like, so we go all the way up to 1 terabyte of storage.
Yeah.
And most people are choosing and opting for the 1 terabyte, but there's mixed. So we go from 128 all the way up to 1 terabyte.
Yeah. So it's fairly chunky stuff. So in other words, if people are opting for that, you know, then these are hard, you know, these are not solid state storage, presumably they're disk based.
So they're all solid state drives, right? So these are all
to 1 terabyte of solid state.
Absolutely.
Which is okay. Well, that's which is pretty chunky stuff. So then you've got speed and resilience, and the next layer really is the blockchain layer. So the blockchain layer, if I'm right, it does not drive the storage. So the storage runs on a completely separate system. The blockchain element, is that designed really to provide the financial incentive and also the proof of network and proof of ping, I think you call it? Is that the sort of the blockchain layer? Does that drive, you know, the usage mechanisms?
Yeah, absolutely. You can think of it as like its own economic system within the network itself. So what we've done is we've created not just the blockchain, but the actual token itself and the data credits to go with it. So we have what's called a burn and mint equilibrium that we use. And this was pioneered by a couple of other companies before us. But, you know, the methodology that we're using for burn and mint is essentially saying, okay, if I want to use any resource on the network, I pay with data credits. So this is no different than like, you know, Google Cloud Platform credits or Amazon Web Service credits, right? So you use these credits or even like mobile data credits and things like that, right? So you just use these data credits, the Revos data credits, to purchase and buy, you know, whether it's Wi-Fi 6, you know, if you want to connect to a Wi-Fi 6 hotspot, or if I'm a developer and I want to push an application out, you know, whatever I'm doing, I just pay for those storage and compute and connectivity resources with data credits. And to get data credits, you take Revos and burn them. And then Revos data credits are a fixed price to USD. It'll never change. So you just take a Revos token and you can burn that. And so whatever the value of the Revos token is at that time, that's how many data credits that you'll get based on its value. And so as you're owning the device, right, you own a piece of that network, piece of all those resources. So the blockchain is validating, you know, the proof of network components, which is the actual storage, the compute, and the Wi-Fi 6 mesh capabilities and those resources. So it's validating that. And also at the same time, it's validating and saying, hey, is that node really there? Are your resources real? What kind of quality of, you know, connection are you providing back to the network? You know, how slow is your connection? How fast is it? So we're getting some metrics. And that's the proof of ping side, where we're, you know, pulling all that stuff back in. And by allowing all of that to kind of mix together into one single blockchain solution, you're getting rewarded for validating your node. You're getting, you know, rewarded for those resources, but then you're also getting rewarded for everybody that's using those resources. So everybody that's spending Revos data credits, you know, you're mining more Revos for, you know, per node for those resources that are being spent. And so it really creates this whole self-sustaining economic system where it really is a decentralized autonomous organization to some extent.
And why did you decide to effectively peg your Revo token at a fixed value rather than allowing it to float like a number of the other key blockchains?
Oh, yeah. Well, the Revos token itself is not pegged to any value, only the data credits.
Oh, I see. So in other words, one Revo token equals one data credit.
Well, something it actually like will that. Probably, yeah, something like that, right? I mean, as the value of Revos goes up, the data credits, you'll get a lot more data credits per Revos, right? So
I see. Okay. Okay. That's effectively the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, all right, well, if I've got, you know, one Revos and the value of that Revos is $20 or $10 or whatever the case might be, but the data credits are like 0.0001, I believe is what we have it set. And then, so you'll get however many, data credits out of that. So
yes,
you get quite a bit of data credits per Revos, even whenever we're first starting off, where Revos is obviously not going to be worth a whole lot out of the gate.
Yeah, that's interesting because, so did you mint a certain number of Revos credits that, so you keep a certain balance that's out there that doesn't change? Is that the general process?
Yeah, I think that's the general idea, right? Is that, so you want to have enough Revos data credits on the network where anybody that wants to use the resources has the ability to get those data credits. So there's a few ways to do that, right? One, you can take Revos, burn a Revos, get data credits. The other way is that we'll be offering some on-ramps that allow people in their native applications on their devices, you'll be able to purchase data credits that way as well. And so this is kind of an interesting point too. So you've been to different hotels and you've used the local Wi-Fi, right, in the hotel?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yes. It was a fabulous experience in most cases.
Yeah. Right. And generally speaking, right, like you've got to log in. They've got, you know, every page login is a little different. Sometimes you got to pay if you want privacy from your service, right? It's just different every time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things that we're doing is we actually unify that user experience for Wi-Fi, regardless of where the devices sit. So we're working and talking to, property owners like hotels, for example, where we'll actually go in and place our devices into their hotel. Now, here's an interesting point. If I have a Revify device at my home, I already have my application, my mobile application. I already have my data credits and I'm already, connected to the network. More than likely, right? I'm already connected to my Wi-Fi 6 hotspot, my Revify device. When I go to that hotel that has a Revify device, there's no more logins, there's no funky pages, there's no issues, right? It's really a seamless user experience to go right onto it.
Yes. So effectively, you're just creating a very large, like a wide area a network with multiple Wi-Fi nodes. I'm just thinking about so the user buys the network unit, they buy the Wi-Fi router, they supply the network connectivity. So you've got all these different service providers effectively connecting all of these units together. So this is not a sort of cloud infrastructure, as it were. It's a completely distributed infrastructure. When I say cloud, in other words, you haven't got a single data center. All of these individual units are all part of one large distributed cloud.
Exactly.
Okay. So that means
that's going on.
And so then you have questions over control, for example. So if you have applications, is it possible to gain control? So I think there are some risks if you have multiple units and you have more than a certain amount of voting power. Are there mechanisms that you've built in to prevent control being taken by one entity that would then have access to all of the computing and all of the intellectual property effectively that sits on those devices?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a really solid question. So fundamentally, like a 51% attack, as an example, right, doesn't really exist on our blockchain because we're not really, it's not a staking protocol. It's not a who has the most compute wins kind of protocol either, right? So because it's completely distributed and we really are aiming for true decentralization, the blockchain is really designed to do one thing really well, and that's look at the resources available on the network, who's using those resources, and make sure that the people that own the resources get paid and rewarded correctly, right? And so it really isn't about, per se, who has the most devices. Now, obviously, if you have a lot of Revify devices, you're going to earn a lot of Revos, and you'll have a lot of data credits being spent. So therefore, you'll have more earning potential. But there's really not, like, if I had 51% of all Revos, it's not like I get to dictate what happens on the blockchain,
and how
at least not for ours.
And how do you prevent, again, the more I think about this, I'm just thinking about the components. How do you prevent sort of failure in the sense where even though you've got devices that have relatively large storage capacities, for any software to work, then obviously you need all of the components. And if what percentage of the network needs to go down before you start seeing significant impacts on the ability to run the programs that are sitting on that network?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the engineering answer, right? It depends.
Yeah, exactly.
The reason I say that is it really depends on, you know, the workloads that you're putting out there. So if we've got a local area network, right? Like, for example, we've got, let's say, like a residential community. This is an actual use case that we have where they don't want to put in fiber, right? They would rather use wireless to blanket the community and then just have a single access point for the whole community. So we'll be backhauling all of that data to this single internet connection with fiber backhaul. So in that instance, right, I mean, you're talking about residential uses where, you know, you've got people probably playing games, those types of things for connectivity. And then you might have some workloads where companies might be pushing out CDNs like Netflix, for example, right?
Yeah.
This is an interesting use case where CDNs will actually push their workloads all the way out to our devices. So now you essentially have Netflix paying you to watch Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So
yeah,
in those use cases where, you know, but again, it's still, those are all really light workloads. And so depending on that, you know, that network and how it's set up, if you start losing nodes there, right, you could potentially lose backhaul connectivity if you're all the way on the far end of the residential deployment. And you might start seeing, applications start failing. So it really just depends on how you're deployed, because that's a very different scenario per se than say like a hotel setup.
I'm thinking more about the storage side where, so, because if you're looking to compete with AWS, for example, then that's a fairly, you know, large competitor to try and take on. So, you know,
by no means.
Yeah. Storage resilience is probably the critical question, isn't it? In other words, if you're talking about storage, the ability to have that sort of 99.99% reliability, even if large parts of the network, because if the network is very distributed, then that's a good thing, but it's also potentially a bad thing because you haven't got control, potentially large elements. So if you've got concentrations with one particular network provider, then that network provider, you know, could, are there weak points? And again, this is, I'm just hugely interested.
Yeah.
So if you've got a network provider that says, well, we're actually not going to work with you anymore. Mm-hmm. And this is particularly relevant with all the net neutrality legislation that's sort of moving backwards and forwards. You know, is that a risk?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always a risk whenever, something new comes out that, you know, maybe people don't understand. But, you know, I think everything that we've read and everything that we've been working on, and we've talked directly with ISPs, we're working directly with wireless network operators as well. You know, and I think that's the first start, right? And that's step one is having communication with them and just having that discussion and understanding where those boundaries are. Because I think, you know, one of our devices in a home, you know, is one thing on a residential, you know, like internet service connection. But now if you're putting, you know, 50 devices in a home, you know, you're going over your bandwidth limits, you know, every month. It would probably be more fiscally responsible to upgrade that to say like a commercial, internet connection. So I think at some point you have a precipice in there where you have to make a decision.
And is there an opportunity for large scale mining? So in other words, as the use of this begins to grow, are there more larger scale commercial opportunities for people that don't want to have the single unit to look at mining the Revo's token in addition to the other tokens that they might have on their existing platforms?
Yeah. So a few different things there. So there's definitely larger use cases for sure. We've got people that are actually creating their own companies who are wanting to buy, you know, in bulk and deploy these, you know, throughout their cities and residential areas. We've got, like I said, property owners. We have ISPs. We have stadiums as well. And we work with some of our partners, right, where we're actually deploying edge to actual, like, you know, full stadiums and kind of some other use cases like that. But, you know, that we have servers that are involved. So this is also running on some of our partners' servers all the way up to a 6 RU server. So those servers will be able to support the network and stuff as well. So definitely larger use cases for sure that we're seeing and that we're already engaged in. And then the very interesting part that I want to point out too is that if you look at kind of what's out there right now for mining capabilities, you know, there's a lot of scripts. It's called script-based mining for different types of cryptocurrencies, right? Like Litecoin, a Doge. Yeah. Dogecoin is that way. You know, there's Digibyte, and I think, you know, there's Verge and a few others. So anything script-based, because we're running GPUs under the hood. So anything that's script-based mining, you can use these to mine that with, right? So not only will you be earning and mining Revos, but you could spin up a mining node within that device to say like mine Doge, right? Or to mine something else. And then you could also run staking nodes on our devices as well, right? So whenever Ethereum transitions to staking, you know, there would be some code work that would need to be done, but you could run a staking node on one of our devices or one of our servers, depending on the, you know, what you needed there for requirements. But the other aspect is that whenever Ethereum does go to staking, imagine all of those mining operators out there that have GPU rigs that they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on. We're going to be offering a way for them to take their compute and add it to the network to earn Revos as well.
Yes, which again has the benefit of spreading and improving and increasing the capacity generally, I would have thought.
Exactly. So
I think really the most important question with all of this is, when was the moment when you thought, hang on a minute, I've got an idea? Because these things don't just happen organically. It's normally a moment which is, you know, this moment precedes the moment where you walk into the door or something because you're so focused on. So where did this come from? What was the genesis of this idea?
Yeah. It was actually about 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
It was whenever it hit me. This was after years of kind of, you know, doing different iterations. And man, you know, we've built all kinds of things over the years, and I've worked with a lot of different companies, and, you know, we've tried to figure out like, okay, well, where is this really going to sit over like the last couple of years? It's like, where are we really going to deploy this edge-based solution? What does it really look like? And so, you know, I was sitting there trying to figure out, okay, what does this architecture look like? How are we going to put this together and tie it all together? It's like, okay, we've got blockchain, we've got wireless componentry, we've got like edge computing. We kind of have all these different parts and pieces. And then, you know, at the time I was also working directly with a pretty large wireless network operator, both terrestrial and satellite. And so I kind of had some, you know, some optics on some things that, you know, I guess kind of cued and learned lessons there of things that were going on within that industry and that market. And then we had partners with like NVIDIA on the gaming side. And there's just all of these different things that were going on. So very large aperture with like a lots of pieces to kind of like put together. And my business partner told me the day before, he's like, all right, well, if you can put something together, right, that can have a direct line to, you know, basically being successful, and there's really not a whole lot of questions about it, you know, we'll entertain funding it basically. Yeah. And so, you know, I was sitting there obviously banging my head against the wall, and I was like trying to take all this stuff and put it together. And I was like, all right, I'm not getting anywhere. And I actually went to bed, you know, kind of disappointed. And then, you know, I woke up at like 2:30 in the morning, something like that. I don't know. It was ridiculously early. And it was like I had a dream or something. I can't explain it, but I saw the whole solution. I was like, I get it. I know how we're going to do this now. And then I presented it the next day.
The most important thing is you actually remembered it. Because there are so many times we have solutions and we think, I must write that down. No, I'll just go back to sleep. I'm sure I'll remember it in the morning. Well, you know. No. So what is your background? So tell me more about, you mentioned that you work with a large wireless company. So how old is RevoFi? And, you know, when did you actually make the break? And when is it going to hit the jet stream?
Yeah, so I've been in telecommunications, primarily wireless, for over 20 years. Started.
I don't think wireless is that old, is it? Probably. You were at the very beginning when you had this sort of the clockwork phones, and you know.
Yeah, yeah. So this was back in you know, around the 2000 timeframe.
Yes.
You know, but I grew up in wireless. My mom was in wireless, right? So she did communications Yeah. So I just kind of like grew up around it, you know, learned to solder and stuff at like six years old, man. So, but, you know, I've been in and around industrial automation, communication systems, all that stuff, both satellite and terrestrial off and on for over 20 years. You know, so it's been a long career, in kind of the space and then ancillary stuff around it, you know, whether it was urban planning or all the way to, you know, full stack development type of work. And so, you know, kind of a breadth of different exposure, I guess, within the industry that, you know, brought me to the capability, and then working directly with, you know, different companies over the years, whether that's oil and gas companies or, you know, different communications companies, chip manufacturers, all of those, right? I think it was a culmination of all that that really allowed me to put it together. And and Revify, even though we started the company in April, the technology is something that I've been working on for a very long time, you know, so.
And again, was it the technology availability that gave you the sort of momentum or the impetus to make the leap? In other words, this thing now exists. Yeah. Where we can have a terabyte of solid state storage, and we can have, you know, devices the size of a small novel that can
totally
have 100 times the computing power of Apollo 13.
I think it's definitely a convergence of technologies that made this, you know, possible. You know, if you rewind the clock even, you know, 5-6 years ago, I don't think that we have anything that really, you know, back then, I don't think we would have been able to put it together and be successful. So it was really the culmination and convergence of all those different technologies coming together. You know, got to give it, you know, credit where credit's due. NVIDIA, you know, has come a long ways in a very short amount of time. Their platforms and technologies are really driving a lot of our capability. Whenever you combine that with all of the progression that's been made in cloud and networking in general, including, you know, future internet architecture that we're working with, you know, working with the named data networking community and all of the academic community that's in that. And NIST is in there as well.
Yes.
And so there's a whole group of people that we've been working with to develop this technology. And, you know, as they say, timing is everything.
Yes. And so fast forward 3-5 years from today, I mean, where would you see yourself in terms of size, or, you know, how rapid has the adoption been to date? And if you were to name another company that everyone knows, and you know, you will be 10 times bigger than that. How do you see this growing?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, just based on, I got a little too much engineer in me sometimes. So I always look at hard data points, right? I'm like, so I think if we look at just our soft launch and our success there, you know, and I have to give, you know, again, credit where credit's due to an amazing team and community.
Yes.
But first month of sales, we were able to cross 250K in device sales, which I think is pretty, you know, I mean, pretty much a testament.
That's awesome. And also, you've got the great benefit of having the interest of the crypto or the blockchain community, who are so receptive to these types of ideas. I mean, is that an experience that you've found as well, that the anything that is solid and that has a business model that can stand on its own 2 feet, that uses crypto, blockchain, distributed ledger, DeFi, distributed autonomous organizations, and actually make them real, becomes adopted as the poster child of that community? Have you found that same embrace?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, you know, ever since I went to the Aspen Institute quite a few years back and met so many different people in the blockchain space, in the Bitcoin world, and, you know, in Ethereum and smart contracts, you know, that was the Nexus retreat. But, you know, I think even back then all the way to today, if you look at the discussions around blockchain technology and crypto in general, anytime you can actually tie that to a physical product, right? Something that's physical, something that people can understand and use and leverage. So having something that's backed by physical hardware, right? So the Revos token being physically backed by the hardware and the resources and the utility of that device, I think that that's a huge, you know, paradigm shift in just how we look at infrastructure, but also the value of blockchain being tied directly to a commodity and utility.
And from your perspective, your, you know, the value that you're creating is not just in the network, but it's in the usage of the blockchain and the fact it's the perennial growth, it's the ongoing revenue stream. So I think it's fair to say you've got a rather large tiger by the tail.
Yeah, it would seem that way. And I, you know, I think it's great, right? I think it's fantastic that we have such a broad community that wants this type of technology, but also this type of ownership, right? They really are saying, hey, I want to own a piece of the future and a piece of my, you know, they want to own their destiny and control their destiny, which who doesn't, right?
Well, exactly. And just to think that that little box, you know, in the desk over there is, you know, making me money and connecting me to the community. So it's, you know, fascinating stuff. So I guess the last few months have been a fairly wild ride, but you know, the fasten your safety belts and scream if you want to go faster for the next few months.
Yeah, we've been, you know, it's internal. We call it Team Rocket. So,
exactly.
But yeah, you know, if I'm being honest with you, like the last month and a half, it's, and even some of my other team members will tell you, it's literally been like a movie, like some of the stuff that's going on, you know, internally that people don't get to see or know about, but then also externally too. I mean, just the tremendous amount of growth. And
yes,
because it's not my first startup, right? I mean, I've been a serial entrepreneur and, you know, and I've done iterations and pivots and, you know, I've done product development a lot and I've never seen anything like this. So it's really exciting to be a part of it.
It is. It's, well, I can, you know, I can see that, you know, the interviews with Jeff Bezos and you and a couple of other guys, you know, just thinking, so tell us, you know, how did Revo5 begin? So I think that's going to be a, you know, certainly one to watch. But all of that aside, Justin, I think now we need to sort of look at the serious stuff. And now is the time for the Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire. So all of this stuff about blockchain and storage, you know, just put that to one side. You know, let's focus on the meat here. So Justin, question number one, what is your favorite word?
What's my favorite what?
Yeah. What's your favorite word?
My favorite word. That's a great question. I would say perception is everything.
Question number two, what is your least favorite word?
Extortion.
You've been spending too much time with the ISPs, I can tell. Question number three, what are you most excited about right now?
I am most excited, hands down, about people changing their perceptions about ownership and what that really means. And just seeing people taking control of their destiny and wanting to do that, right? And taking just a little bit of risk that I think is going to net them a lot of positives as they go down this journey.
Fantastic. Question number four, what turns you off right now?
Oh man, it is probably the toughest time in human history to launch a physical product due to supply chain. So the amount of challenges there, you know, we're overcoming them, but man, it's definitely not, it's a love-hate relationship.
Well, it can, you know, it can only get better. Think of it that way.
Yeah, right? That's what I'm saying.
Question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, man. Anything music. I love music. So I went, you know, I went to school for the recording arts and studied that for a long time. I've been in music most of my life. So any kind of music, really. I have to have music.
Question number six. What sound or noise do you hate?
I would say anybody that says stop or wait. Any kind of like boundaries, right? They're just like, hey, stop, we can't do that. Anything that's like, we can't do something. I'm like, that's like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Yes. Question number seven. And again, you can plead the fifth. What is your favorite curse word?
I'm going to have to go definitely with the F word.
Yes, good. And again, and all of its brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, and various use cases. So, and as an engineer, right, you can respect and appreciate the flexibility of that word.
Yes.
Question number 8, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Yeah, I've always wanted to really, I wanted to become and get my license to sail, actually, right? I feel like that would just be a tremendous challenge to, one, to obtain, right? So there's that, or an airline pilot, one of the two.
So it's just, I suppose you're just surrounded by the absolute. So you want to bring in a little bit of metaphysics, a little bit of, unpredictability. Is that the attraction?
Yeah, chaos is my, that's, managing chaos. I find peace in chaos, yeah.
Question 9, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh, anything medical related. I'm just not wired for it. I'm just not.
And the final question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
High fives, fab job, welcome.
Fantastic, yes. Just, it's been such a pleasure having you. I could spend hours just, you know, digging into your background and what you've done. I mean, you dropped some sort of, you know, magical, notes about how you were, you know, in music. And so, you know, if I had hours, I think it would fly. But how do people find out more about you? How do they find out more about what you're doing with RevoFi and, you know, learn more about Justin?
Yeah. I think for us, and thank you, Matthew, by the way, I've really enjoyed talking with you as well. So hopefully we'll be able to do it again in the future.
I hope so.
But to find out about us or to get involved, you know, the best way right now is to go out to our website, join our Discord community. That's probably the best way to engage directly with us. To find out about me, I'm pretty easy to find. You can go, probably go on LinkedIn, you know, if that's your thing, you can go there. But you can definitely get a hold of me, via our website and stuff too. Pretty easy guy to find. And then, we've got this, firm that's actually helping, you know, I'm an engineer. So, you know, by heart and trade and with some business in there, but, I'm not too good on the PR side. So they're helping get the story and stuff out. So definitely be looking for, some articles that are coming out and feel free to follow us on social media, of course.
That's wonderful. That's great. Good. Exciting stuff. So as I said, I really, really look forward to following how all of this, you know, explodes over the next few months. And I will look back and say, I spoke to Justin, you know, when he, just at the very beginning. And I'm sure I can dine out on that for months to come.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to get you a device too, as soon as we start shipping them.
Wonderful. Well, I would be delightful to have it. But, you know, thanks again, Justin. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on and, look forward to staying in touch.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate you.
Thank you.